My name is Nick. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is a Saturday Night Fever group. Recently, it used to be Love and Service group, which was a huge part of my sobriety. And I get to greet now at Saturday Night Fever, which is cool. And my sobriety date is July 15th of 2007. I want to thank Amanda for asking me to speak. I don't know where she's at. In the booth. Hi. Thank you, Julia, for sharing your story. I grew up here in Brandon, just a little bit close to Tampa. My family was Lutheran, and so we would go to church every Sunday. And I remember being like 8 years old and sitting in the pew, reading through the Bible during the sermon, trying to contradict what the pastor was saying. And, you know, thinking back on it, being 8 years old, like, that's really weird to have a spiritual malady at 8 years old as a little kid. And I'm trying to get my mom into it. And she's like, pay attention to what he's saying. And I don't know, it was just funny. And I remember being, you know, young and just not feeling like a fit in. And also, I remember a moment being young too when I remember exactly where I was at. It was in Albertsons at the time over in Mango. And I was coming out of the grocery store, and I was talking to my mom and said, you know, I wish they just had like a book on how to live. Like, I feel like I just didn't get that manual and everybody else got it. And all of these things, you know, I heard within a couple weeks of being in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got to AA, it was exactly where I needed to be. And when I got here, I felt like I was getting wasted. I ended up blacking out, and they told me that I did the chicken dance and the electric slide, and I was having a great time. But what it did for me was, you know, I had all those feelings and that spiritual malady that I would have never called it a spiritual malady until I went through the steps with the sponsor and understood what that was and what was really going on with me internally. But it gave me that. You know, I think, you know, if you're alcoholic, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, the feeling of ease and comfort. And I knew this was going to be a huge part of my life, you know. And I would proceed to, you know, try to get, you know, messed up every opportunity I could from then on out. And, you know, and it wasn't easy being so young. But by the time I got to high school, and I had gone to a private school at that same church up until eighth grade. So I went to ninth grade at a public high school, and, you know, at the time I was playing music, and I ended up getting into the punk scene, and I felt like I had arrived. You know, here's a bunch of guys, you know, skateboarding, I'm playing drums in a band, you know, we're playing all over little local venues, you know, house shows, and drinking every, you know, Friday night on the side of this kid's house over near 22nd and what is that, Sly, and, you know, like Sly and 15th over there near Nebraska. And you know, and I thought it was awesome. You know, you could have not, there was no way, if you would have told me that at 20 years old I would, you know, take my last drink or be the last time I'd be getting messed up, I would have told you you're full of shit, because this is something I'm going to do the rest of my life. I had this vision of being an old guy, you know, sitting, you know, like in a rocking chair on a porch, you know, smoking a huge doobie. Like, I don't know where that came from. I just had this idea, like, this was going to be a huge part of my life. And so, you know, that was it. And then, you know, high school was just something that was kind of on the side. You know, up until that point, I was really big into playing select soccer all over the state. And When I started getting messed up, that was not a priority, so that kind of went to the wayside. But it's cool because recently, you know, being sober, I'm able to do some things that, you know, I might not have done otherwise. And I recently started playing pickup soccer games on the weekends, so that's been really cool to get to do that and be a part of that. And there's a guy in the program that plays with me, so and I get my ass kicked every weekend. You know, it's a lot of fun. And so, you know, here I am at the time, everything's working out. And a lot of times, you know, when I'm that young, I'm able to, you know, have two quarts, you know, and just, you know, smoke a lot and everything be all right. But what I didn't understand, and, you know, as I get older and older and older, I've got an illness that's progressive. And my illness is progressing and my friends aren't, you know. And so, you know, by the time I'm getting out of high school, I'm becoming, you know, this is, I mean, it's definitely an everyday thing, but drinking is now becoming an everyday thing as well. And, you know, I get into college and I have no direction on where I'm going to go. And I I ended up with no degree at all and about 100, at the time it was like 90 credit hours, just no direction other than I took a lot of religious studies courses because I like to intellectualize things, and I think if I can understand it, then I have power over it, and it doesn't work that way as much as I'd like it to sometimes. And so I'd end up in these classes, and I think that if I got drunk before class, then I would have to study drunk, and then I'd have to take the test drunk because I had to be on that wavelength if I was going to be able to get by. And I remember just being wasted in the back of this classroom in this astronomy class. I don't know why I was taking astronomy. And I was this stadium seating, and I'm looking at everybody in the front row, and I'm like, how are they doing this? Like, they seem like they've got everything together, and I just can't do this. I don't understand. You know, and once I got sober and went to school, it's because they probably read the material prior to going to class. Then they showed up for class, you know, and they're not messed up, and they're able to pay attention, take notes, and know what's going on. But that was a foreign concept. I didn't understand how that made sense. And it's because, you know, there wasn't any way at that point that I was going to live a sober life. And you couldn't have persuaded me to even think that that was a possibility, because the only sober that I had ever known was being completely discontented, you know, completely irritable, completely miserable, you know. I couldn't do sober. And I would always say, you know, if you felt the way that I felt sober, you'd be drinking all the time too. And I thought that everybody got the same exact reaction that I did to drinking, and it's not true. You know, there's plenty of people that, you know, and plenty of people that can have just one or a half or, you know, a quarter of a drink, and they, from what I understand, they say that they start to feel the sensation like they're starting to lose control, so they stop abruptly. And that is not my reaction whatsoever, and I don't understand. If that's how you feel, like, why would you even want to drink? I can't wrap my mind around it. So there was no way that sober was ever going to be an option at that point. But, you know, having, you know, alcoholic illness, you know, it started to progress, and so I could see that there was definitely something wrong when I started drinking. I always overshot the mark, and I really hated, you know, puking my brains out, but it just seemed to happen. And it was a successful night if I didn't do that. You know, and so it really dominates my life. And you know, about a year before I get sober, my life basically looks like I wake up, you know, and I might go to school, I might, or I might do this, you know, where I wake up, I start drinking within a couple hours of waking up, even if I told myself the night before that I cannot do this anymore, I can't do this tomorrow, or I wake up with that intention, within a couple hours I start drinking, and I get to work, and I'm driving for a pizza delivery company, and I'm drinking on the job, huge cup right in the middle console, you know, and I try to get in the store as quick as possible, out of the store, so they don't really know what's going on, like they can't smell it on me, you know, and I start getting in car accidents and blacking out and coming to and swaying in front of a door, and I have no idea where I'm at, and I'll get off work, and at that time, I thought that I was clever enough that if I went to a bunch of different locations and drank a little bit here, a little bit here, a little bit here, and a little bit here, they wouldn't know what was going on and couldn't see what, you know, what was going on in my life. But when you're not that out of your mind, you can see someone declining, you know. And so when I got sober, most of the people that I knew that were close friends said, we were just hoping you kind of figure it out and everything would just be okay. We didn't know what to say to you and you wouldn't have listened anyway, you know. And I thought they were all assholes because they didn't call me while I was in treatment, you know. Like, I'm just that self-centered that people care about me, but I can't see it. And so I would create these party atmospheres so that I could hide how much I was drinking. Like, you know, I'd do, you know, just find some guy's house. We'd get a bunch of people over. I'd convince them that that was a good idea. We would, you know, have a bunch of booze. I'd play blackjack, you know, you lose your drink, so I can just drink. And they think it's a party. And I get to just get by. And, you know... Up until a certain point, you know, alcohol made me feel like I was a part of, and at that point, I could be in a room full of 100 people that I knew and feel absolutely alone, you know. And a lot of these shows that I was playing, I start showing up so wasted that I can't keep rhythm, and within a couple songs, we end up stopping because I'm just that messed up. And I remember the singer later on when I got sober, he said, I remember a lot of the time just... We'd be at a show, and I'd say, hey, Nick, what's going on? And I would just kind of, like, look up to the side and not even, like, be any, you know, coherent whatsoever. And I had no idea, you know, a lot of this, you know, was going on or what that looked like. And I thought everybody was experiencing life the same way I was. It just wasn't true. And so I didn't understand the mental obsession until I went through the steps with another alcoholic, but I could see it. I just thought I had an ethics problem. I thought I was just a bad person, you know, and I don't like telling the story, but it kind of shows, you know, what that looks like. Right before I got sober, my grandmother was dying of ovarian cancer, and she was in a hospice center over in Sun City, and if I would have taken every opportunity that I would have had in about that... month and a half that she was there, I probably could have seen her close to 30 times. And I think I saw her about 3 times. And every time I get there, and especially when I've got family coming down from Illinois, my parents are there, my sister's there, you know, everybody's there, and I'm sitting right next to her, and I'm thinking, you know, this is exactly where I need to be right now. And within an hour, my head starts telling me, hey, your friends are down the street and they've already gotten started and you got to get, you know, caught up. And so I start listening to that, and then I'm walking out of the building and my pride won't let me go back. And my head's telling me, what are you doing? You know, you only have so many opportunities with this person that, you know, is in your life. And I just keep walking to my car and I leave, you know, and I can't stop thinking about it until I start drinking. You know, and I thought I was just a bad person, and I didn't understand that I had a mental obsession that once it was in there, it was more, you know, more powerful than any thought that was going to come in my head. And I had to get, you know, have a solution for that. And, you know, I ended up going to jail for the first time. We were talking about it earlier, because apparently I'm a lower class criminal because I went to jail for marijuana, so apparently it's not good enough. But basically that night, I was just done. It was one of those nights where I just gave up. I was like, I can't deal with this anymore, and I went to jail. And right when I got to jail, it was like, I made the wrong choice. And so by the end of the night, my family comes and gets me, bails me out. My sister's crying. My mom's crying. My dad just has this look of disgust on his face. And I remember just looking up at him, looking at both of them, and then looking at my dad and saying, you know, I've got the money at the house. I'll get it to you when we get home. And I just walked right past him. And my arrogance told me that this is my problem. Thanks for the help, but I can deal with this because I'm a man at 20 years old. You know, just completely arrogant and had no real perspective on what was going on. You know, I didn't understand until later on, having somebody else go to jail and bailing them out, that you actually take responsibility for that person whenever you bail them out. So they were really helping me out. And so in my mind, I absolutely have to stop smoking pot, but I can still, you know, drink and take hallucinogens because they don't check for hallucinogens, and I can probably get past probation drinking. So I just, you know, delve right into that even harder than, you know, before. You know, and in a month and a half, I'm back in jail, and I don't understand this time because I didn't have anything on me. And how do you go to jail when you don't have anything on you? And so what had happened was I fell in a pond with a lot of LSD on me, and it absorbed into my skin, and I had a psychotic break from reality. What's cool about this group is that I remember, you know, being young in sobriety, and a guy getting up and sharing kind of the craziness of, you know, just being on acid all the time. And I remember going to NA meetings whenever I first got sober, and I didn't identify at all. You know, and I've seen crackheads come into AA meetings and talk about, you know, their addiction, not identify at all. And I'm an alcoholic who happened to use drugs, and it took me 3 sponsors until a sponsor was clear about that. We went through the book that way, where it was like, oh, okay, so yeah, I would use, you know, Xanax so I could sleep, you know, but it wasn't, I would do it sparingly, like it, and it wasn't anything that, you know, I really had any problem with, but I drank alcoholically. I had the mental obsession. I had the physical compulsion with that. You know, I had the spiritual malady. I just never had that physical compulsion or mental obsession with many, many drugs, you know. And I know people that are just the opposite, that are hard drug users or, you know, real drug addicts that that just drank and it wasn't a problem for them, you know. And, you know, I think it's important to kind of identify that when I talk about any drugs that are in my story. I'm an alcoholic because of, you know, the mental, physical, and the spiritual aspect of it, you know, and I think if I can translate that, I don't, you know, there's not a problem with me talking about drugs because most of us have done them. Anyways, psychotic break from reality. And so I ended up trying to get away from where I was at because I was going crazy and tried to steal a horse, bareback, a riding lawnmower, and then a golf cart, and none of those worked out, and ended up jumping in a brand new 2007 SUV with the keys in the ignition and made it about a mile and a half until I crashed into a tree, a ditch into a tree at about 65 miles an hour. Was in the back seat of the car that I was driving, slammed into the windshield, didn't break a bone, you know. And 3 girls out, and this was out in Levy County, which is nothing. There's nothing out there other than some underground springs. And 3 girls in the middle of nowhere found me this night and took me to the hospital. And I remember being at the hospital and just saying, just tell them I'm sorry, because that's as far as I want this to go. And it took me a year and a half until I finally met those people face to face. And so I'll talk about that in a little bit. So I ended up, you know, in jail. And that night, I basically tried to figure out, well, I guess it was that next day, but I tried to figure out for about a full day, like, what's my next move? Because I've always got to have that, you know, I always had the number one, as long as I don't do this, I'm okay. And then I have to come up with that next one and that next one and that next one. And I always had to come up with, okay, well, what's my next move? If since this didn't work out, how am I going to get through this and past this and make it okay? And there wasn't anything that I could think of that told me that I would be in a position different than where I was at. Basically, that I was fucked and I was going to continue to do the exact same thing no matter what I tried to do on my own power. You know, and I think that's the absolute hopelessness and desperation that, you know, enables most of us to actually get into this work. And without that desperation, I wouldn't have been willing to take any direction, especially from a guy that I don't know, you know, that, you know, I just had to have that desperation. So within 5 days of that happening, I end up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, you know, and I don't think that's coincidence. So I get into rehab over at Turning Point, and my first sponsor I found at the men's meeting that they took us to on a Friday night, and he was crazier than I was, and I think he's still kind of crazier than I am. But what was cool about him is that he seemed like he had been through the same things that I had been through, but he had a way out, and so I was willing to take his direction at the time. And he did things like, you know, he told me to call him every day, and I was like, why am I going to call this dude every day? That doesn't make any sense. And so I start calling him, and one of the most important things that happened in the first, couple months of my sobriety was a phone call when he was like, so what are you doing? Just trying to make conversation. And I said, well, I've got this, roommate at this rehab, and he's got all these different affairs with all these women, and I'm trying to help him manage them, and give him some advice, and I don't have any experience with that. And so he's like, how long have you been talking to this guy? And I'm like, well, it's been about an hour. And he's like, about an hour? First of all, you don't know shit about living. Look at where your feet are at. You're in a fucking rehab. And it was the first time that I actually heard that and was like, wow. I mean, I want to hit this guy, but he's right. You know, like, look at where I'm at. I don't know anything about what I'm doing. And so we started getting into the steps the way that he had been shown how to go through the steps. And it helped a lot. You know, even just, I think when you're new, just the willingness to do all of this work, no matter what the steps look like, will get you through until a point when, if you haven't gone through the steps out of the book, you might start feeling it like I did. But he was really, really big on, just because you got sober doesn't mean that what you're going to do is go to, three AA meetings a day. I mean, while that's good when you're new, like, you're supposed to get sober to be a part of life. We don't get sober to just sit in AA, and he would quote the part of There's a Solution where it says, a more important demonstration of our principles are laying our, respective occupations and affairs, and while helping, drunks, go through the steps is huge, it's not the only thing we're trying to do. It's not the primary aim. And so he said, well, you've been playing music forever. Like, you kind of owe it to that band to go and play with them. And I said, well, I don't know that I'm ready to do it yet. And when they finally, about 3 months into my sobriety, said, you know what, we've got a show coming up, I called him, and he told me to read, 100 to 102, I think it is, or 99 to 101. And so I read that through. He said, if you feel like you're in that position, give me a call back and we'll talk about it. And I did. And looking back, I remember about 2 years into being sober, he wasn't my sponsor anymore, but I took him to speak over in Sarasota. And on the way back, I was talking to him. I said, when you told me that I was spiritually fit in that situation, looking back, I think I was in the middle of my four step. I don't know that I was really spiritually fit to be going and, being around that same kind of atmosphere. And what he said was, the reason you were spiritually fit is because you were willing to ask and take direction. You were open to that kind of message. And so I went and played a show, and there were like 9 people from AA, and they hated it. I played in a Latino hardcore band. They hated it. And I speak very little Spanish. But I loved it. I went crazy playing drums. It's still on YouTube. It was a lot of fun, and we ended up getting to play a little over a year sober. I got to play in a Latino punk fest over in Montebello, which is East LA, and I had never been to Los Angeles, so that was 5 days of getting to experience that and go to some meetings over there, and seeing the mountains on the beach over in California. It was really cool. And I got to be a part of that, and had I not gotten sober, and took direction, I don't know that I would have been able to experience that. And so that was awesome. And so, I started going through the steps. I remember thinking it was so spiritual because I was dressed all in white for my third step. It was not at all. But I did feel, kind of an experience going through that. And when I did my fifth step, I'll say this, because it's funny how many people talk about the four step. I had about 6 weeks to do my four step, and I did it the night before, because we set an appointment to do the fifth step. I did it the night before in about 6 hours. It was as thorough as I could be at the time, and it was good enough. And we did it at a Subway, and he basically watched TV the whole time, and it was kind of a confession. I didn't really see any truth about myself, but I felt really good to get all this out. So 6 and 7 didn't really make sense to me. The A step, we went over the list, and I was willing to see certain people and did the ones that I was willing to go and do, and then didn't really understand 10 or 11, and he said, I want you to start working with new guys. And I said, okay, I don't think I'm qualified. He said, I didn't ask if you thought you were qualified. It's important to start going and try to carry this message. And so I tried to do it to the best of my ability and went crazy with it. But, like, I loved when I got into AA, I loved it. You know, I loved the first time I went to a detox meeting, and the feeling that I felt coming out of that detox meeting, just feeling like you were on fire, you know, just so passionate with the fact that I'm able to go talk to these people. I don't know what I'm going to say or anything else like that, but here they are, you know, sitting exactly where I could be, you know, and I've got a little bit of hope that I can share with them, and I might see a little bit of something going on in one of their eyes, you know, by the time I leave. And it was powerful. So I loved doing that, and at one point in time, I had a commitment doing that for about a year and a half, you know, and there's just so many different parts of, you know, service that I've gotten into that have really defined and changed my, you know, not only my sobriety, but my, you know, my personality, the way that I'm principled. You know, going and being a DCM, which I'm sure most of you don't understand what that means. Being a DCM, which is basically a representative for groups and being a servant to groups and having to carry a message that, you know, basically this is their opinion on something and I might not agree with that, but I've got to be a servant for them, you know, and it teaches me how to serve on a level that I wasn't comfortable with. As far as, you know, the steps, basically, once I did that, I was about 3 months sober, started going and trying to carry the message to everybody that I could, even if you didn't want it, and even if you're walking to your car, as you're shutting the door, I'm asking you if you've got a sponsor. And I actually got one guy to the 9-step, and he was in his car, and I actually stopped him before he shut the door. But, I mean, I was just crazy with it, you know, and I just tried to help as much as I could. But eventually, at about 2 years sober, before I get into that, my first sponsor ended up moving to Portugal at the time at about 9 months, so I got another sponsor, and really what I got out of that guy was anytime I had something going on in my life, he would ask me, you know, how are you doing on your meds? You know, have you called those people that you had that accident with? You know, like, what's going on with all that? And if I didn't have an answer for him, he'd say, just call me when you do, and hang up the phone. And, it was really valuable for me. I mean, with all the wreckage of my past, I ended up, everything kind of got compounded, and I ended up on probation for about, I think I got early termination at about 13 months. And the event of stealing that car and crashing it, I remember going to the courthouse past the pretrial. It's the trial date, and there's nothing, no agreement, no deal, nothing. I'm looking at a max of, I think it was 18 years in prison, potentially. And it's a 2.5-hour drive to the courthouse, and all I'm doing is just praying. And I'm thinking in my head at the time, if there's someone that I need to help in prison, you know, I understand if that's where I need to be. I really don't want to be there, but I understand if that has to happen. And as I'm walking up to the court doors, the prosecuting attorney walks up to my attorney and basically says they're willing to drop all the charges if they can just get, you know, compensated for the vehicle. And my attorney later on said, I've never seen anything like that happen. Like, that's insane that you got that kind of deal, you know, and we were able to do that. And I made payments to my parents until about 4 years later they said, stop giving us the money, you know, we appreciate that you've been doing it this far, but just stop giving it to us. But it still took me about 9 months to even make contact with these people. I was just so in my head about it. And so I made an appointment with them to go see them. And it was one of the most powerful experiences in the first 2 years of me being sober. I went and I said, you know, obviously, you know, I'm here. We've already paid for the car. But if there's any other way that I can make this up to you, just please let me know. And it seemed like they were kind of prepared with an answer. And they said, well, we know what you've been doing, you know, in your life. And we just don't want you to waste the opportunity that we've given you. And we want you to take care of your mom because you put her through a lot of shit. And that was it. And I didn't understand at the time how these people that didn't know me, that I completely ran through their life and, you know, to me, I mean, hit it pretty hard, had that much love and compassion for a complete stranger that they didn't know. It was just beyond me. Like, I was thinking, well, maybe I can just do something physical for you. I mean, I was a stonemason at the time. Let me build something for you, like anything. Anything that I can see that's going to be tangible, because I didn't understand that kind of love. And if I would have ran the opposite direction that night, I would have ran directly into a quarry that was about 100 feet deep, and it was maybe 80 yards away. And at the time, being a stonemason, I thought that was really cool, so that was really spiritual. There was so many coincidences that linked up. I mean, it was like I can't deny the existence of this power in my life. You know, that was it. You know, I got to a point where I couldn't call myself an agnostic anymore. You know, I've experienced too much. But at the same time, at about 2 years sober, I'm going into AA meetings, and this is really where I came close to drinking. I'm going to AA meetings. I'm basically opening up the book and sharing, like, if you've got a problem, I've got the answer in the book, and I'll start reading out of the book, and two or three people will get up and walk out of the room. And I don't think it's a coincidence when more than one person gets up and walks out of the room at the same time when you start speaking. You know, and I just thought I had the answer to everything, but internally I'm just miserable, you know, and I can't get it, and I'm not talking to a sponsor, and I'm maybe telling one person 60% of what's going on. I might be telling another person, you know, 35% of what's going on, but I'm not being honest. And I got to a point where I remember being outside of a group that we had started that was a big book meeting over near Falkenberg and MLK. And before the meeting, just praying, like, I don't know what I need, and I don't know who I need to hear it from, but just I'll be open to whatever you've got. And about 2 weeks later, my friend Chet, who we ended up, you know, creating the Love and Service group later on, he told me about this guy who was living in Vermont, and he's like, I think this guy might be able to help you. And he's kind of, I think, doing the steps the way that you might be open to and you might need. And so I called him, and we had a conversation. He started taking me through the book in a way nobody had ever shown me. And basically broke it down for me, and I could see, you know, the unmanageability. I could see the powerlessness, the, you know, all the different things that basically in my head, I had the big book at about 95%. Like, I could see myself in 95% of the book, but the other five, I was like, I don't know if that's really me. So my head would say, well, maybe you're not alcoholic. And, you know, it kind of smashed the rest of that. And I really had a good experience with the first step with that and just completely smashed. Like, I'm an alcoholic through and through. There's no doubt about it. You know, and so we did the fifth step over Skype. It helped me see so much more truth than I had ever been able to see, so much dishonesty that I didn't know was there. I didn't know I was being dishonest with myself and all these different relationships and all these perspectives and ways that I was viewing things and really weren't true. I mean, I saw a little bit of that when I first went through the ninth step and would go and talk to people and say, well, I'm trying to make amends for this. And they're like, I don't think that ever happened, but how about this, 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 and this? It's like, oh, well, let me try to make amends for that on the spot. I don't remember that. You know, just I had a warped perspective on what was really going on. And, you know, when we got to the amends, he said, how many of the amends, you know, were from your first list that you never did? And I started going through them, and especially I really appreciate that my first sponsor said, you should not go and make these amends you want to make to ex-girlfriends. Right now, it doesn't make sense. You're going to do way more harm than good. But, you know, at 2.5 years sober, I don't have that same kind of, you know, motivation. And really, the motivation is I'm trying to make this right. You know, and I made contact with a good amount of people that I had known in the past, especially ones that I had hurt pretty badly. Some of them were married. And I said, I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to meet with you or anything. If that's going to make it uncomfortable, I don't want to get involved with whatever's going on. But if I can try to make amends, that's what I'm trying to do. And I was able to clear up some of that wreckage. And it was really powerful to be able to do that. But I wouldn't recommend it to someone who's brand new. And so going through that and then learning how to also try to carry a message in a different way. He kind of was the same kind of guy where he got to a miserable point trying to be a little bit militant in AA. And so one of his first recommendations for me was, I want you to go into meetings and I don't want you to share for about 3 months. They've had AA before you were around. They got, you know, by just fine without you. They're going to be able to do okay without you for about 3 months. And so what happened was, he said, instead, I want you to pay attention to the people who don't want to be there, the people that are looking at their watch, that are really uncomfortable in their seat, they're kind of squirming around. I want you to see what's going on, and I want you to go talk to those people after the meeting. And And as a result, I was able to meet more people where they were at and help more people doing that than I had been able to do months prior. I mean, I was just able to meet people where they're at with my experience rather than trying to sponsor the world, even if you had 30 years of sobriety and I didn't think you were doing it right. And life really started to change for me in a very positive way. I was able to see things in a lot different light, and things went pretty well for a time. And more recently, I started to kind of deny what my spirit was telling me in certain areas of my life, and got pretty miserable in some of them for a while, and I got a lot of great stuff. I did the stonemasonry thing for about 5 years, ended up getting a job, which I still have today, designing outdoor living, which I love. It's really cool. I went to school, got an associate's degree, finally, with like 120 credit hours. I think that's twice as much as what you need. I've gotten to be more of a part of my family again, which took probably about 5 years to do. The first like two or three, my sister really didn't want to talk to me and really didn't trust me whatsoever. But just trying to be a part of that has helped do that. So a lot of great things were happening, but I was pretty miserable. And eventually it got to a point where I had to do something about it, I got to see a lot of truth in this particular situations, which was really positive. I'm still very involved in service today. Getting involved with a new home group, which is pretty exciting. Recently moved to Tampa from Brandon, so it's still kind of new to me. Recently got engaged to an amazing woman, which is really, really cool. Really huge part of my life, it's a lot of happiness. I don't know. I mean, I get to go meet her family over Labor Day weekend in Kentucky, so that should be exciting. I don't know. I've been given so many gifts being in AA, but really, I mean, the hugest thing for me is the fact that I get to have peace of mind sober most of the time, which I never thought was ever going to be a possibility for me, especially, before I came to AA. I remember being a couple weeks sober, looking up at guys picking up 20 years and thinking, there's no way you're an alcoholic, because if you feel like I feel all the time when I'm, not drinking, there's no way you'd be able to get 20 years sobriety. And what I didn't understand is that they had a change come over them as a result of working the steps, and they got to have peace of mind sober as long as we do these, simple things. And a lot of times, will come up when I don't really want to do them, but I don't know, as long as I'm just putting myself in this, in this thing, and I've got myself so involved in the fellowship on, that level in service that I don't think I could really pull out of it. I get to see other people doing this thing and get to see examples, and also, at times whenever I'm not feeling it, I'm seeing somebody else who's feeling it, I can kind of recommit and, just try to live this way a little bit more. It's been incredible so far. So thanks for asking me to speak.